I'll ask you each to share, you know, one or two things that you would recommend that people can start taking action on right away. Fran?
So, you know, I'll say two things. The first is that, sorry, two things. The first is that, I would say that as I look at all of us, regardless of roles, we're all leaders. And looking at how we are driving an inclusive environment in everything we do, asking folks to share their perspectives, getting in front of a meeting, and if you know you have introverts in a meeting, to actually send out the materials beforehand and give people time to process. There's such little things that we can do to really impact the environment. My favorite inclusion story occurred in a very interesting place. I was at a parent-teacher conference for my son, and the teacher told me, hey, there's something really special that happened with Nicholas. And I asked her, I said, okay, what? I was already nervous at that point. And she said, there's a boy in his class that has a really significant speech impediment, and there was a substitute teacher that couldn't understand him today. And after he had tried three or four times, Nicholas stood up and shared what he was trying to share and then asked the little boy to comment and ensure that he had said it right. And I was pretty blown away by that, and it was pretty profound. And my takeaway from that was, he was ensuring that everyone had a voice, and especially for those that maybe were not positioned well to share their voice. And I think everyone can do that, whether you are a leader of an organization or individual contributor.
Great. Thanks, for Debbie. Yeah.
So I would say two things. One is don't apologize. Don't ever apologize for who you are, what you are, and what you need to do. Be bold. And that confidence and that ability to express your individuality is what you need to celebrate. And once you feel that way, I think I can't remember which speaker said this, but there was, I think Brené Brown said this, if you don't put a value on what you do, how do you expect others to do it?
Yeah.
So be super bold and super proud and don't ever apologize. And the second one is about, we heard so much about building a personal brand, and how can a brand be personal if you don't bring yourself into it? So if you're going to mute down or somehow hide or leave a few parts of you behind, it's not so personal, is it? So build that personal brand that really brings your unique self to the table and focus on being happy and being whole. And that will be a difference to your organization.
Thank you. And Patrice?
So I would say three things. One is you have to be aware of the environment you're participating in, right? Not just the way you're participating, but the actual environment. So awareness, you have to be open to change it. You have to be open to change it. And then the third thing I would say is own it. You own it. Don't wait for someone else to do it for you. You own it. People pick up on other people. And I say this to my team, when we have those types of conversations where there's different perspectives and different views and it seems long and drawn out and you're just like, make a decision, right? When a decision's made, I feel exhilarated and I feel exhausted because that's the energy that occurs when you have those conversations. But I will guarantee you the end result is worth it.
Thank you. And Marcy?
So I would just encourage you, whenever you are participating in anything, that you also get the opinions of your peers. Mm-hmm. And if you're sitting in a room and it's the sales group or it's the marketing group, to really make sure that you're looking around the room and it's not just diversity in the room, but make sure that you also are accountable for bringing diverse thought. So even though that person or that group is not represented in that meeting, maybe you're the one that brings up, hey, why don't we bring finance into this, or why don't we bring marketing? Or you go touch your peers, and I'll take it one step further. You all have friends that you don't work with that are business people as well. Do not lose that connection. That diversity of thought and getting that other information and those ideas is just another way of inclusiveness that really helps you have that broader network. So that's my two.
Okay, thank you. And Anna?
Yeah, I would say I had a couple thoughts. The first is that, you know, we all saw the statistics. You heard them today. I'm a big math person, so I look at those statistics, and I just told you I've been looking at them since grad school. So it's a bit sobering. And I think, you know, it's a bit like a scary story. If you, like, you just focus on that, then you kind of get this atrophy. But I think if you focus on actually doing something different, and I know it sounds really corny to say this, but, you know, many of you probably have an idea or two today that you're like, you know what, like, that's actually a really good idea for me. I'm going to do it. And then tomorrow you wake up and you sort of forgot, or you got busy, your toes got burned, I mean, whatever, right? And so I think it's really important to persevere and to really try new things, because if you don't, like, if you don't from what you picked out today, you're probably not going to do it next Tuesday. So, like, tomorrow is a great time to start. Actually, in fact, leaving today would be a great time to start and really try it. And there's, like, no downside to trying new things. And I would say the second thing is related, which is that you don't have to go at it alone. I remember, like, that incident when, you know, I was excluded from the team dinner. I mean, I really didn't know what to do, so I ended up calling, you know, people I trust and I love, and I got all this kind of advice. So every time I've been in, like, this can't possibly happen to anyone else because there's, like, these seven criteria, I find out that, in fact, it has happened, and that I can find a lot of people that have that seven criteria, and a lot of them can be men. And I have had many mentors and many people who believed in me who have been phenomenal male leaders, and your peers will be phenomenal male leaders in the future, and people who are on your team will hopefully be, you know, female and male leaders in the future. So I think to Patrice, you have to open this discussion. You have to open this discussion with your team and with everybody, because let me tell you, I just had lunch with our millennials who are interning, who interned last summer and now are at Cisco, and many of them, and especially the men, were like, I'm so with you, like, I want to help this problem, but what do I do? Like, what? Okay, give me one thing I need to do different. So I think if you open that conversation, you'll see that it's a lot more populated than you once believed. And that's, I mean, at least for me, that's very powerful. So anyway, those were my thoughts.
Thank you, Anna. And what we'd like to do at this point is invite you to ask questions of the panel. So just feel free to come up to the microphone.
Hi, my name is Emmy. I'm with Oracle. And just listening to everything you guys are saying sounds great. You get a lot of inclusion. You get a lot of ideas. But as a leader, what I find is that then it makes decision-making very difficult. Right? So on the flip side, if you get so much input, then how do you avoid decision by committee or analysis paralysis? So how do you get to then a final answer?
So, go ahead. No, I would just say I think it's very – what we've done, things that you can practice in your team is – and this sounds really low-tech, but it's like manage the agenda. Like, okay, we're going to open, discuss this for X, and we are going to not leave this room until we make the decision, and we're going to make the decision at this time. We're going to leave 20 minutes to make the decision. And the decision makers are you, and you. And so it's really clear, like, who's providing input and who's making the decision, and that – we're not going to leave a meeting until it does. And by the way, the meeting needs to end on time. Like, I'm a big be on time, leave on time. So it drives me crazy when meetings go on and on and on. And so I think if you set it up correctly, it will help you kind of, the process will help you ensure. But you have to, that assumes you have the culture of openness already, right? Because if you don't, people will just shut down. They're like, oh, well, these are three decision makers, so let's just have them do it. But I think if you're very clear about that and you really have that open discussion, I've seen it help a lot in our decision-making.
I think you key on a real huge point, which is who gets to make the decision, right? So is this meeting about brainstorming?
Right.
Is it about communication, information gathering, versus this is a committee and they do have the power to make the decision as they walk out the room? Because a lot of times I think if you set it up wrong, and they up with something, and you know, okay, they want to go to Mexico. Well, guess what? We're having a meeting in Chicago. I know that's a little thing, but you feel then they feel like you've unempowered them.
Correct.
I mean, you should have set it up correctly that they were you were gathering input. So I just think that's a real key thing that you mentioned, Anna.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, panelists, and thanks, Heather. I really enjoyed listening to all your experiences and all the insights. So I've been having this question in mind for a while now. At work, as a woman, I feel I'm doing more of the communal work rather than more of leadership work. And when I go to my manager, when I say, hey, I would like to be more of here, I feel as if you have to grow, You cannot use the word just leadership. They say, oh, you're already leading. But when you say, oh, I'm an engineering lead versus an engineering manager, it makes a difference. It feels like you're growing up in hierarchy. So as a female engineer who also does coding and also a manager, I feel most of the time I'm ending up doing a lot of communal work, and as a result of that, I have little less opportunity in being part of the leadership meetings, and whereas my peers who are not female, or maybe it doesn't matter whether they're female or not, they get to be in those meetings, and I feel excluded, which I feel might help them go into their next step. And I feel maybe I will not be included to be in line for the next growth level. How do you think we should handle this kind of situation?
I can take a crack at that, having grown up in engineering. I think by nature, because we tend to be very inclusive and we tend to be good coordinators, we easily get pigeonholed and stereotyped as the party planners or the event planners or picnic planners. And we do that because it gives us a chance to network, and it just gives us as much happiness as it's a good thing to do for the group. But I would actually put this back on your responsibility to some extent. This goes into the whole area of establishing your brand. Mm-hmm. Often it can also be about what language you use to bring your work with your management. How do you talk in terms of business outcomes? How do you talk in terms of the impact the work you're doing is having to the larger growth? How do you make your manager look good? How do you make the organization look good? So once you start changing some of the vernacular or the language around which you communicate, mm-hmm. and don't volunteer, perhaps, maybe just to break that stereotyping sometimes, like who's going to plan the next offsite? Is like, no, I'm not going to plan, somebody else plan it, right? So I have been in situations like that, mm-hmm. and I can say at least a couple of us in this room have been, having known their careers at Cisco. But we were able to break the stereotype primarily by changing how we present ourselves.
And also, it's not just communal work. It's also, like you said, the collaboration. We are a little bit more intuitively collaborative. So I end up doing a lot of the breadcrumbs kind of work, which is the grunt work in some ways. Of engineering, it's still engineering, but it's really the back end, very much in siloed into doing a particular thing, which doesn't help me grow my skill set. It really helps me helps the company to move the product ahead to make it better, but it's not helping me grow in the career. So should I just drop the bucket and look for myself, or
go ahead. Okay. I almost failed programming class, but I'll take a crack at it. You know, there comes a point where you have to worry about yourself too, right? You can't. We try to solve for the greater good, and oh, by the way, there's us, right? So you have to strike that balance. That's the first thing I would say to you. And there's nothing wrong with it, right? So feel good about worrying about yourself. The second thing is, you know, you might not be volunteering. You might be asked to be doing these things, right?
I'm volunteering in this case.
Okay, but don't again. Redirect. If someone asks for a volunteer, count to 10 and go to a happy place in your head.
Count to 100.
Right? Don't count. I wouldn't engage. Just to see who else rises to the occasion, right? If you do get assigned something because you're the reliable one, you're the one that mm-hmm. we can count to, sometimes it's okay to redirect it and say, you know what, but Sally over there or Sam has this attribute that I think will benefit this project and drive a greater return.
Yeah. We're all laughing because we've all done this.
Right? And smile. Yeah. And then count to 15, right? Because don't let the quiet and the don't let that rattle you.
Totally magnify that comment. One of the biggest lessons a mentor of mine had me do mm-hmm. when I was exactly in your situation. Mm-hmm. She was a lot older than I am, and I was like, Susie, volunteer, right? So she's like, stop volunteering. I'm like, I can't. Like, it's like physically I'm incapable of not volunteering. So she actually had me sitting in a room with her practicing. So she's like, Anna, can you do this? And I'm like, and so she practiced putting that pregnant pause. So she taught me the pregnant pause, and I felt so uncomfortable. And she timed me. She's like, you're not going to say a word for 2 minutes. Go. And it took many sessions for me to get this. So let the silence reign. It will help you so much. And then when that doesn't work, you need to say, look, I've done this work for a couple times. I think it would be a great experience for X or for Y. And I'm going to go talk to them and, you know, and move. Propose versus waiting for the system to figure it out, because the system's too busy to figure it out, especially, you know, if you're not clear about what's happening. So you need to propose, and you really need to embrace silence. Like, you really need to be super comfortable with, like huge pauses.
Right. Have a good visual. Like, go plan your vacation. If you can't sit there quietly, plan a vacation in your head while you're supposed to be sitting there quietly.
Yeah. You know, I just had one thing. You're not done with the conversation with your manager. And what I have found so many times is you have to get creative. And when I say creative, I mean more than two or three different ways. And so instead of volunteering for some of the administrative work, bring ideas to the table.
Propose.
Volunteer to lead those efforts. I found that being a project manager was a way to demonstrate that you could lead teams even without having management responsibility. So I would just get really creative and try again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions?
No one has a question. I have one more question.
Anyone? Oh, okay.
One second is ago.
We'll invite you back.
You guys all seem so happy, so Cisco must be a great place to work. I'm just curious about some of the flexible work environments that you might create that are innovative, maybe you've learned from other countries. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in. So it's really odd because I wrote the first flexibility policy for Cisco about 10 years ago. And I say odd because it didn't have anything to do with my role, but I ended up writing it. And what we realized back then was it was all about the work. And it's funny because there is a transition that you have to go through, which is for managers, the understanding of what success looks like and what the work looks like. Once you go through that transition, you don't have to watch people do their work anymore. And so I would say about 10 years ago, that was a big turning point from a mentality perspective. And then for us, what ended up happening was then the technology was there as well. And so I think for all of us, we have video conferencing equipment at our home. We leverage WebEx more times than we care to admit on a day-to-day basis.
Favorite
and
acquisition.
So what's happened is manager capabilities, the culture, and the technology have come together to enable that. From a data perspective, 47% of our employees have a manager that's in a different location. And so when you have that as an element of how you work, it makes flexibility a lot more natural for us. And so I would say it's a curve that we've been on, but something that we consider a muscle that we have.
I will say, though, that there are still some old-school managers, right, even at Cisco.
We get them.
We don't know who we are talking about, but who like to see their employees always around them, right? I mean, they like to see them. But I have also found it, like what Fran said, because we also are so much into promoting the technology that we create, that you almost want to exemplify and give examples of how that is possible by doing it yourself. And even though I have a manager who would rather see me at work, oftentimes I've done one-on-ones from my home video conference. And because you kind of prove yourself and you're based more on the outcome and the impact you create, what can he or she do over time? They get over it.
Right. I also think that...
Do you have any job sharing opportunities at Cisco?
Yes, we do. Okay. I'm sure you would love to talk about
it.
We absolutely do. We have job sharing opportunities, career... Many different programs, like what Fran was saying. There are many different programs in different organizations that can not only create career advertising internally, but also have career advisors up to a certain grade level. We actually assign career advisors. So I personally have been in Cisco 19 years, and I've reinvented myself at least 5 times. So every 4 years, I've moved completely different functions. Sometimes it has to be self-motivated, but we do have career advisors who will help through the process.
Thank you very much. Any last questions?
What about hers?
Yeah, you want to go ahead and...
She's got okay. A couple more.
But we will make sure we get your question.
So we've been hearing a lot about this unconscious bias, and I'm wondering how you guys are playing that into being an inclusive leader, because it's so important, but it's not something that's always top of mind when you're trying to be an inclusive leader.
Well, I can tell you, my whole team went through training about what it is.
Right.
So did right? Just, again, to be aware of it and to catch each other when we're in it, right? So that was a big step, is just to recognize it exists and admit it. And then be aware of it as it's happening. I personally have had people on my team correct me. Because they've noticed it.
And I think that the training was excellent because I didn't think I had a bias. You know, I'm like, oh, I really, you know.
We all do.
You know, and so then they have you take this, you know, this little test thing and you're embarrassed a little bit. You're kind of like, huh, I thought I was, you know, a little bit better than that. So I think that awareness that everybody has biases that they come in, it's not just about biases about men against women, et cetera. It, you know, they show, you know, a picture with people with tattoos and, you know, did he come out of prison or is he the CFO? I mean, it was a great
class. Do
you want
to sit next to him on an 8-hour plane?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So yeah. I think that Cisco has really spent a lot of time, and I do think we try to catch each other to bring that up.
And Marcy, you had a good story over lunch when you were talking about how, as we're talking about holding each other accountable, how you had observed behavior where you brought it to someone's attention.
So, yes, I was in a meeting, and, you know, one of our Cisco coworkers, you know, as a woman would say something, he would almost not acknowledge it. Like, so if you would be talking about the Super Bowl, as soon as you're done, he would start talking about hockey, you know, like not even acknowledge the fact that you said anything. And I took him aside at lunch and said, are you aware that you're even doing this? Because it's not, it's almost like a disregard or disrespect. And it wasn't, like if the guys were talking about football, he was all in and talking about the next, and the, you know, the draft. But when the women were talking, so I think that holding each other accountable. And, you know, he was mortified, I will say. It wasn't conscious. It was unconscious. But once it was pointed out, he really wanted to correct the situation.
Thank you. And then I think we've got a question back here.
Yes, hi. I have a question that kind of relates to the concept of being excluded. So I've learned a lot in the past, or heard a lot rather, about this concept of a boys' club and having coworkers that you work with. I work in a very small team now, mostly men. And this concept of there being this kind of boys' club where outside of work they're pals and they go running on the weekends or they do things and they kind of have this other connection outside of work. And I guess my question to you guys is, have you ever been in a situation where you've been working with people who are kind of in this, like, boys' club, so to speak, and maybe just some tips on what your tactics were for dealing with that? And it may not be talking to them about it or actually doing anything that involves them, but maybe just the way that you chose to change your mindset about it, or just anything.
I won't answer the question, but I want to add, though, it's I've heard stories where men have complained that it's a girls' club, too.
Really?
So there is. So I think the question, the theme is more around being excluded, regardless of the...
Absolutely.
I have heard comments in Cisco, too, which is, oh, they always go shopping together, those two ladies. If she buys a bag, she's going to buy a bag. And they're together all the time. They're really tight. So there is a girls' club, too. So being excluded of any club is not cool. But I won't answer the question. I'll let somebody else answer.
I will. One of the things that I decided was to be a golfer. Just because, coming up through the ranks in sales, it always did seem like the boys' club were out golfing. And, you know, right or wrong, I decided, okay, I'm being excluded not because they're not inviting me. I'm being excluded because I'm not participating. So for me, you know, part of it is where do you want to join in? Versus are they excluding you? Are you just not participating in? Yeah. But I would caution all of us, because I have heard that as well, is, you know, how come that we don't have a men's, you know, conference, right? Or, you know, all the women went to the spa and they didn't invite the guys. And I know that sounds strange, but if the guys aren't golfers, they might have wanted to be invited to go too. So
a mani-pedi, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I would just tell you, I think one tip that worked for me, and I think all of us have experienced that. I mean, if high tech is very male dominated still, right? So But I think one thing, and it depends on what relationships you have with the, with your peers, but, you know, if you have good relationships with a couple, like maybe some you don't know really well, but others, like one or two you know really well, I just sort of opened that conversation with them. I said, hey, you know, how come, like, you guys go golfing? And, you know, I really don't want to learn how to play golf because I'm not really an athlete. It's not going to go well. So, I mean, should I be offended by, like, what kind of decisions are you guys making? And it was a really open discussion, but I was very close to this person. And what I found out is that, you know, it didn't stop them from going golfing, but I think they were conscious of the fact of, like, to the unconscious, like, they weren't really realizing that they were making two or three important decisions at the golf course that I really cared about. And I think once I opened it to just one who's a super kind person, he sort of, like, would call out that behavior. So he's like, you know what, that decision we really need to bring on Ian, so let's just have it in the office. Mm-hmm. So I think just not necessarily avoiding it, but really kind of opening it up in a very positive way, like, hey, what do you think, give me advice, da-da-da. And then, you know, I noticed that they started doing, like, dinners, and so I would go to those dinners, and, you know, it slowly got better. And then after a while, I don't know if it changed or I just didn't care, but it just kind of went away. And it made a big difference for me in those two time periods how I felt about it because I had been able to discuss it. So if you're close to one of them or two, that might be an option. Probably. Yeah.
What she probably. Said is she said she became their boss, if you couldn't hear her. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we've got a question here.
Hi, I'm Anahit. I just wanted to ask, as executive members, besides inclusion, what else have you done, like programs, implementing programs or including other women that are maybe down there? What have you done to improve their confidence, I would say, towards leading? Going towards leading.
I think that something that's so basic that can be implemented anywhere is really programs around mentorship and sponsorship. And it's funny, you don't need a program for that. I remember very early in my career, I was so hungry for those types of relationships and for that type of feedback and learning that I would seek people out and ask if they could support me. And I was also really thoughtful about having people that could see me on a day-to-day basis working, asking them if they would partner up with me to tell me how they perceived me showing up in meetings. And so there were things like that that were incredibly meaningful. From an overall programmatic perspective, there's absolutely investment that we make at the various stages of a woman's career. And depending on the stage, the programs are a bit different. And so some of the stages, as an example, so when we have people coming out of the university and maybe completing their first couple of years, there are programs that we have around how we help them then really kind of rise within their second key role and what that looks like. And things like how do you build a network, which, by the way, we all need at any stage of our career as well. How do you get deeper from a business perspective? And so there are things that we do at every stage from a gender perspective to really support growth.
Yeah, I mean,
The question was around technical
as
well.
Yeah, so I think what Fran said, we have programs that are tailored to technical women also. I'm sure some of us have participated in that. But I would tell you, like, outside of the programs, there is really simple ways. So, like, if you're asking me personally what I try to do, like, I actually have this kind of macaroons and tea thing that we do, which we bring in sort of younger women in their career, because I can't really meet with every one of them. But, you know, we just start a dialogue, and they'll tell me about what they're working on. And I have found out that actually one of the biggest ways to encourage people is to say, do something so simple, which is like, wow, that's a really cool project. I really like what you're doing because dot, 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 or I did this project. And just giving feedback that's positive. I don't know who said it today, but, like, positive feedback goes a long way, a really, really long way. So even if you spend, like, 3 minutes with somebody, but you give them positive feedback that encourages them, makes a big difference. And in my opinion, for the technical crowd, it makes even a bigger difference because it just makes it seem possible where sometimes it seems not. And so for what it's worth, I think that makes a really big difference. And that doesn't stop with us. So I think you will have a responsibility for people who are coming in and for high school and for elementary. So it's really at every level.
And there's traditional programs like Toastmasters. Yeah. And the most recent one that I feel Cisco's invested a lot in is data sciences. So because analytics and data science is such an important trend right now, not only do we work very hard in recruiting the right talent from the market, but we've also created a data science academy within the company and enroll members into that to tool them up to the up-level skill set. So several learning programs. Of course, that's not unique to women, but it gives an opportunity to retool yourself and to be competent.
I think the only thing that I would add is individually we each own it. So there could be all these programs, but you have to have some clarity about what are the areas that you want to focus in on and then actually work with the people or the programs or whatever it is. And remember, it's not a point in time. It's over your lifetime. So pace yourself, too. Right? And sometimes it's okay to ease up. Sometimes it's really good to lean forward.
Thank you. And then we have time for just one last question. You want to go ahead?
Hi. Just have a quick question about just the general culture within Silicon Valley. Just wondering how you guys tackle the challenges of some of the high-tech cultures tend to be male-dominant and very abrasive and not always playing nice. Is there any experience, an example you can give that you have some kind of workaround that you can stay true to yourself and being authentic?
So I'm on the East Coast. It's not a Silicon Valley. I live right outside of Washington, D.C., right? So it exists. I think if I reflect back on my life, there are differences between men and women, the way we dress, the way we communicate, the way we feel, the way we talk. You know what? That's all goodness. So as opposed to being at odds, harness it, right? So that's the first thing that I would say that one has to do and feel comfortable with. You know what? Guys don't wear dresses. That's probably good, right?
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing, right? But feel comfortable with that piece of it. And I would tell you, when there's shenanigans going on or those games, I make a choice. Do I participate because I want to and I believe it's the right thing to do? Or do I check out? And again, go to a little happy place in my mind, because at the end of the day, that conversation really doesn't matter, or that idea or what have you. So I think you also have to think about where you're going to play and where you don't play. So
I also think you have to pick which challenges do you want to make, right? So if you see it, you know, you don't have to call them on it, you know, in a big room. You don't have to have this public hanging. But I think that it's important that if it's something that you're so passionate about that you feel so offended, I would not just swallow hard and walk away. I would really make sure, whether you're manager or an individual contributor, that you address it. And, you know, if you're really uncomfortable, then you should go to your manager, but I wouldn't let it pass. But I would say one of the things, and I'm not a lifer at Cisco, the culture at Cisco, and maybe it's because we're so focused on the competition in the market, I always feel like, yes, I want to be number one, but, I want her to be number two, not last, right? So it's not that, you know, doggy-dog culture. And I'm not quite sure if it's John Chambers that we can credit that for. So I would also say that, you know, when you focus on the enemy is not each other, then it really is. It really changes, I think, the dynamics. And I've been at Cisco now for 6 years, and just it's a very different culture. And I'm very grateful. Thank you.
You know, I would just add something from a little bit of a different lens. You know, there are things that you can do to reinforce the culture that you want. And so the first thing is, as companies, you want to talk about your culture. You want to talk about what it is and what it isn't. We did something for the first time back in November that's really exciting, which is we created leadership commitments. And within those leadership commitments, we have for the first time expectations around diversity and inclusion and a host of other things as well. But it was our ability to say, hey, this is what we want leadership to look like. Other elements of it that I think are contrary to Silicon Valley just a little bit are elements of servant leadership, meaning that leaders are there to serve their teams and not the reverse. And so I think that's a journey that we're going through. I think it will be a multi-year journey where this is just how we work as well. But I would say, you know, in addition to making the decision around how you're going to respond in a situation, I think we're also looking from a company perspective, how do we set ourselves up for success as well?
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, I want to thank you, all of our panelists today, thank you all for participating with us. We look forward on continuing the journey that we're on together and making a difference together. Thank you.
Thank you.